Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Live from the corner of Broadway and Battery, Damon Bruce, Ray Ratto, and Matt Kolsky, broadcasting in beautiful downtown San Francisco. This is Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game.
Welcome to your Monday afternoon. It is wonderful to have you here today. It's wonderful to have Matt Kolsky back in studio. And for the first time since March 12th of last year,
woohoo!
The three of us are in the same room together. We got plexiglass. We have safety equipment up. I don't even think we need that, but here we are. It's a better, brighter world. How are you, fellas?
I'm against it.
I love seeing Ray in person. He's much more beautiful in person. I know that's hard for people to believe who have seen him digitally, but it's true.
Trust me, it doesn't get better. It only gets worse.
This is as good as it gets.
I absolutely love waking up in a world that the night before discovers Steph Curry is a good basketball player. It's my favorite way to wake up in the morning. It happens like 4 or 5 times a year, and then people forget the lesson, and they have to be retaught that lesson. And what a lesson Steph Curry put forward against Memphis, and it set up what everyone kind of was looking at over the last couple weeks. Could this be a hey, how are you with the L.A. Lakers? And indeed, it's going to be on Wednesday night. Really can't ask for more than that, fellas. Then, oh, just by the way, Steph should shoot like that all the time, and you would have been the 4 seed, but I'll save that for hour 2 of this show.
Oh, we're going to do this again?
Oh, we're definitely doing this again.
I know, because the last 7 games, he's not shooting as well as he was during the previous 17. I think maybe they're playing, well, they have to play him as much as they possibly can, but I think there's a little weariness showing up. Not that I would change anything about what they're doing, because they, even though they won by 12, it wasn't really 12. That game hung in the balance in the fourth quarter. And I think part of it is because the thing that the Warriors can't overcome is the fact that they're kind of a thin roster. And so they can get worn down.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it didn't just hang in the balance. The Grizzlies took the lead in the fourth quarter, I believe. It was absolutely right there for the taking. And, you know, Steph's not going to shoot that much very often. I think it's his highest shoot, his most shootingest game of all time. That being said, I didn't have a problem with a single one of those shots. So, look, that's what they're going to need. Ray said it. They can't change the shortness of the roster, as it were, at this point. There is nothing more to be done. To the extent that there was a cavalry, it's Jordan Bell. And that's not a great cavalry. So it's got to be Steph. Let's see it. Go nuts.
We got an awful lot of sound to get into. Obviously, you got a team victory lapping the fact that it did qualify. Let's get our syntax right here, guys. Let's make sure we're using the right pronouns. Is this the playoffs? Are the Warriors in the playoffs, or must they win a game or two for us to say they're in the postseason? Is this like a purgatory postseason play-in? How do you want to call it?
Just say postseason.
Yes, yeah,
because it's more games than teams 21 through 30 get to play.
Right.
So it's postseason.
Right. But it is not playoffs, I would argue. Right. I would, if we're going to have the like syntactical disambiguation here, playoffs.
Welcome back, by the way.
Thank you.
No one was saying that but you.
Playoffs begin to me with the first game of round 1.
Right.
So there are 4 play-in games, which would be postseason. I feel like postseason is the broader term for postseason is the tissue, you know, as opposed to Kleenex.
Right. This, I think, you know, you look even past beyond the marquee games. You look at how the regular season wound down. You look at the games that are waiting for us tomorrow and on Wednesday night. I don't think, fellas, I have ever seen a better tweak to an end of the year who's in, who's out in sports in a really, really long time. Like, the Major League wild card took a minute or two for me to get used to, and now it's the only thing I will concede that Bud Selig absolutely, you know, nailed during his commissionership. I didn't like it, but like in anything in baseball, I'm slower to come around to it than any other sport. The NCAA's first four, again, it felt like overkill, but now the choice between having it or not having it, you're going to keep it. This was an instant smash. This was number one with a bullet. Brand new artist debuted with a number one album. I mean, the play-in has been a great idea. Might have left players tired. Might have left guys gassed at the end of the year when they'd rather kick up their feet and kind of coast. But that was its beauty.
I think let's see how the games play out before we decide that. Because only one of the four is one that anybody would clamor for. I mean,
really?
Indiana, Charlotte... I mean, you're going to be tearing at your eyes about the middle of the second quarter. The Celtics have been bad. And Washington, you never know. And San Antonio lost 12 of their last 14.
How do you make an unsexy matchup a little bit more sexy? Put something on it.
Yeah.
And that's what's on these games. Now, the first one is, you know, you'd like to win it. The minute you lose that first game, you have 48 minutes left in your season. And that, to me, is the compelling reason to... tune in, not just, how about this? You might be able to skip that first game if you don't have a rooting interest. How can you say no to that second game? It's the same argument that I make to someone who would say they're not a hockey fan. You cannot deny overtime playoff hockey. And I don't think you can deny a winner-go-home basketball game.
By the way, three of the first four NHL games, Stanley Cup games, have gone to overtime. So we're well on our way.
Hockey.
I digress.
It delivers in the postseason, and I totally agree with you on this. Like, sure, Ray, fundamentally, Charlotte, Indiana is, like, the last matchup Adam Silver is rooting to happen in a national television environment. Okay, I get that. On the other hand, it's do or die. LaMelo's out there. Like, there's some things to enjoy. And more than anything... it should be everybody just on absolute tilt trying to win. Because, you know, it's a do-or-die situation. That's always fun.
Here's what you got to love about Draymond. Game ends. Post-game interview with Kalena. He's still on tilt.
People are talking about, oh, you guys are so small and Valanciunas was going to take advantage of his size. Well, he did a good job. But are you guys almost enjoying...
dog. Straight like that. I don't know how else to tell you. People have been going at me for years with centers. They've been going at Loon for years. That ain't work yet. We dogs. So keep trying it.
Here we go. Stay frosty, everybody. It's the postseason.
I love the frostiness. Valanciunas did not get frustrated by the defense. Let's just say that.
No.
He just didn't win.
Yeah. He was surrounded by guys who couldn't shoot.
Yeah.
But he had his way.
Yeah, he did.
Size is a problem for the Warriors.
Well, and the only reason why Memphis loses is because... they're not great shooters from distance. They have to go to the basket all the time. And you would think that that would occasionally work against the Warriors. But Memphis was awful from beyond the arc. I mean, they were at no point did they make the Warriors have to guard them. Because if you make the Warriors guard them, then that means guys have to exert a lot more effort defensively. And Golden State already exerts a fair amount of effort. So if you push them hard, that's a problem. Now, do I think Memphis will be like that if they play again? Probably not. That's why it's probably would behoove the Warriors to win on Wednesday night so that they can avoid, A, playing the extra game and playing against the team that works them hard. You know, if it was San Antonio, it would be different because I don't think San Antonio works anybody very hard. But Memphis is just a bad matchup for the Warriors, even though – the Warriors won yesterday.
Yeah, I'm not sure they... I'm kind of with... well, okay, there's two separate things here. First of all, of course you'd rather win the first game. I mean, that's a no-brainer under any circumstances. On the other hand, the Lakers clearly ought to be and probably are a better team than Memphis, so that's a harder matchup. Like, it's not like you're dodging Memphis to try to face the Lakers. At the same time, I don't think you'll get away with the same, in particular, Tony Allen treatment of Ja Morant a second time. Like, I do think odds are Memphis shoots it better, so it would probably be a tougher game.
LeBron James has gone out of his way to endorse Steph Curry for MVP.
Classic.
It's pretty interesting, to say the least. We will talk about that. I think that there is a little bit of a personal agenda there. I also think that there is an awful lot of stacked up respect for Steph Curry. And if you're LeBron James, how could you not? This is the fifth time in the last 7 years you're meeting this dude in one way or another in the postseason. We know what happened in the NBA Finals. We have seen many people in the media kind of put up a field goal for Steph and then move that field goal once he hits the shot. One of those guys, one of my friends, guy we love to hate, Nick Wright, joins us today at 5:20. He has some, he said, I was texting him earlier today. He's like, I got some respect for Steph Curry to talk about on the show today. I was like, oh, welcome to the party, pal. So we're going to talk to Nick Wright a little bit later on. And how about this? He won't like us calling him the Hall of Famer. Today will be the only day I do it. But Michael Wilbon was enshrined into the Springfield Hall of Fame. He wins the Kurt Gowdy Award, which is the basketball equivalent of the Spinks Award winner for Major League Baseball. And I'm just going to tell Wilbon, look, nobody says Spinks Award winner, Hall of Famer John Miller. He's just said Hall of Famer John Miller. Hall of Famer Michael Wilbon joins us today at 3 o'clock, fresh off his induction at Springfield. And we're ready to talk about the playoffs with him. Yes, Ray.
Well, it's the Spink Award, not the Spinks Award, because Leon Spinks is not memorialized.
Sorry, thank you very much. Spink, Spinks, we'll get it right before the end of the show today.
After the great orator, Leon Spinks. Yeah.
But the other thing is, that's as good as it gets for somebody who doesn't play or coach.
Yeah.
Or referee or own.
Of course.
So he got the highest award he's capable of getting.
It's like, what is it, the Medal of Honor for civilians? Used to mean something anyways. Maybe it will again someday. Anyway, it is really good to have you here. Thank you so much for joining us today. We got a ton to get into. Interesting things happening all around the world of sports. Albert Pujols is a Dodger. You got to be kidding me. Okay, he is. The Clippers actually tanked two games to not play the Lakers. Ugh. I just want to look at you and do the Kobe Bryant meme and just say, soft. We're going to get into that today. And guess what? The 49ers added a receiver that is more interesting than you think he is. And we're going to talk about that a little bit later on. But obviously the focus of today is what the Warriors have done, where they are, how Steph dragged them over the finish line. And we got an awful lot of stuff to get into this afternoon. Kolsky's back. Ray is here. We're all in a studio. How about that? Damon Ratto and Kolsky. And we're brought to you by Network Capital Funding.
Don't miss Warriors Lakers Wednesday night on 95.7 The Game. Now back to Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky.
Maybe three of the four play-in games aren't marquee, but the one that is the biggest marquee that you could put up in the NBA right now. We got Warriors, we got Lakers, and we got it coming up on Wednesday night. Your play-in matchups begin tomorrow. The Hornets are at the Pacers for the east side of the brackets, 9-10. Then you get Wizards and Celtics for the 7-8 game. The Wednesday night fun begins with Spurs and Grizzlies, and then Warriors and Lakers tips off at 7 o'clock here on 95.7 The Game. It's obviously the game the NBA wanted to give you. I think it's the game the NBA fans wanted to see. As excited as we are, as much as we think the Warriors, absolutely, man, they're going to have a rock to throw at Goliath here, that they are going to be hopefully in this game. The only other thing that could go really well for the Warriors, and boy, I don't mean to be painting negatively right out of the rip. I mean, especially with Ray here to do that. But look, the Warriors, I hope, are either in a basketball situation that you feel really good about for four games, for four quarters against the Lakers, or it's a bad start, blown out, Steph does not have a very good night at Staples Center, you're white flagging this thing middle of the third, and then you take your shot against Memphis. Because the worst way to go down to the Lakers would be an all hands on deck, and I mean, we're playing eight tonight. Everybody plays their rear end off as hard as possible, only to come up a day late and a dollar short. That would be bad for the turnaround game if that's what you're in. So I really hope the Warriors, they go ahead and beat the Lakers or lay down and die, and we'll see you again against Memphis. And by the way, but for one fourth quarter, laying down and dying against the Lakers is the only brand of basketball the Warriors have played all year. I hate to say it. I hate to bring this up now. Everybody's excited. The Warriors, but for they played 12 quarters of basketball against the Lakers in the regular season. They got their asses kicked in 11 of them.
They did. But the funny thing about the playoffs is, at least these playoffs, is that nobody's quite sure how healthy the Lakers are. And because this has been carnage for pretty much the entire league, the Lakers have been playing with injuries to their three most important players or not playing with them. So I'm not sure how close to 100% Davis will be, LeBron James will be, or Dennis Schroeder, because Dennis Schroeder is hugely important to them. So I don't know what we're going to get out of the Lakers. And I think their confidence level is such that they won't be nearly as troubled by a loss as Golden State will. Because I still believe they think they are to the manner born, even though they've had a hard time with players 4 through 12 most of the year.
Well, to sort of simplify that a little, I don't necessarily disagree with what you're saying, Damon, that, you know, getting in a tight one where it's back and forth and exerting a lot of energy and then only to lose is sort of the worst outcome.
Double overtime loss.
Right. That's sort of the worst outcome. On the other hand, I also think you have an opportunity here to get the Lakers into that mindset. Because while their full-strength squad is clearly better than the Warriors, they're dealing with a lot more sort of active injury management right now than the Warriors are. And, you know, I think there's a scenario where Steph goes for 20 in the first quarter and the Warriors are up by 20 at halftime, where the Lakers are like, you know what? Let's shut it down and take our chances with Memphis.
Hey, I guess we're going to return to the point I've been making. I'll take all the 20-point quarters out of Steph Curry I can get.
Right.
You know, like if you can give me one right off the rip, that's a great way to start. I mean, Memphis is in that game because the Warriors came out of the gate so slowly, so poorly.
Yep.
And, yeah, my problem is the way that Steph shoots down at Staples Center.
You know what's interesting? I have the same perception. I saw, I believe it was Henry Abbott of True Hoop, tweet today that actually over the long term, he's at about his career average.
The numbers aren't as bad as my eyes.
But the last four.
Been bad.
The last four regular season games at Staples have been particularly bad.
We had, what, that 0-11 down there or whatever it
from
was?
From three, I
yeah,
think.
Yeah.
That was a couple years ago. But
and then he came back the next night and broke the record.
Right.
Whatever it was.
And he did. I think he had maybe like a 1-for-10 from three night this year or something in that range. So there are some recent nasty memories at Staples, I think, is part of the problem. And, you know, who knows how real that is.
Yeah, I mean, the great thing about your eyes is they will lie to you only 100% of the time. That's why you have to look stuff up.
That's why you use your ears when Joey Bart is hitting.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The ears never lie.
Yeah. The nose is a better detector. No, the idea of whether Courier shoots well at Staples or not is almost irrelevant based on the fact that let's see who they defend him with. If it's Schroeder and he's putting his body on Curry the way Dylan Brooks did while he was in the game yesterday.
Hopefully he'll foul out.
That's going to create its own problem. I mean, what got exposed yesterday more than anything else is that Memphis, like almost every other team, doesn't have two defenders of Dylan Brooks' quality. Because if he fouls out and they could bring in the ghost of Tony Allen, for example,
right,
then the Warriors are in much bigger trouble. But it was clear that, you know, as the game went on, Dylan Brooks was having a harder and harder time keeping up because Curry never stops running. And unless you can defend like that at that rate for an entire game, in which case you have to be in better shape than Stephen Curry is because you're reacting to him, not the other way around.
Tough.
It's ridiculously hard. That's why most teams do this in bulk. And why I was a little surprised that Memphis didn't do more of that. Is to give Brooks some help. you know, with a double team or, you know, more traps. You know, they just assume Dylan Brooks can do this. And Dylan Brooks can do it for a while.
Well,
but Curry's idea of a while is a lot longer than most.
Yeah, I mean, there's that. But here's the other thing about Dylan Brooks. I think he actually probably defends Curry about as well as some other guys who get more credit for it. The problem is, if you're not one of those guys who already has the credit, you get called when you foul him. Like, too many guys who are seen around the league as great defenders do exactly what Dylan Brooks was doing to Stephen Curry last night, and they don't foul out because they don't get called for it. So I think Dylan Brooks is in the tough spot of being a pretty darn good defender who isn't recognized as like an elite defender, and so he still gets the sort of straight calls that most people get, as opposed to, you know, they let Pat Bev and some of these guys commit assault on Steph off the ball.
Patrick Beverley plays Steph Curry with his left hand in the guy's pocket the entire
game.
And they don't even make pockets on these NBA shorts. However, there's a pocket for Pat Bev.
That's why I will be very interested to see how these four games are officiated. Are they going to be officiated like playoff games? Or are they going to be officiated by like regular season games?
It's a great question.
If they're playoff games, then it will more closely resemble Bruins Capitals.
Chaos.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's going to be anyone's strategy. And certainly, I think, you know, I was talking to Lucas and Nash about this before the show. If you're the Lakers, how is your strategy anything other than put all of the biggest players at every position on the floor, slow it down, and just lean on those suckers all night long? Right? Put LeBron in the post. Put Drummond and Davis out there together. And now you've got LeBron posting Andrew Wiggins and, you know, Drummond and Davis against Looney and Draymond. It's really tough for the Warriors. It's just there's a lot of size.
By the way, in the meantime, are we ready to, like, golf clap Andrew Wiggins?
I've been ready to golf clap in a while.
Ray, would you like to join us on
golf
clap?
Hold on. I think I have something for this. Hold on. Not like a roaring, but like a solid. Well, we're clapping. We're clapping for Andrew Wiggins.
Yeah, look, I'm all done. I'm all done hearing what Andrew Wiggins isn't. I think he's more of what he is. Either way, you got half a glass of water. I'll give you that.
And you know what else? I think one of the biggest things, and I think even through half or more of this year, a fair criticism of Andrew Wiggins was, he was 20 years old, averaging 22 a game, but there's a little of the, like, Sammy Sosa, a lot of those are solo homers in an eight-run game sort of thing going on. Second half of this season, he hit big shots. He showed up in big games where they really needed him. I think you got to credit him for that, even if it only lasts half a season.
Well, the takeaway on him ultimately is that at a time when the Warriors were going down the gurgler, which is about the time that Wiggins would have reverted to Timberwolf mode, he actually stepped up. And it wasn't so much offensively, because I think he is what he is offensively. He might get you 38 once, but mostly you're going to get the 20 you're going to get and just shut up about it. But he never backed down defensively. And the fact that he got his minutes in every night, he becomes now the one thing that he was condemned for, and rightfully.
Yes.
Reliable.
Yep.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. The one thing we constantly praise Klay Thompson for the ability to do, he compartmentalizes in his game. He can have an off-shooting night and be a stud defender the entire way. Wiggins is in that area. He lives on that cul-de-sac anyways, where his night might not be the best offensive night. He might not be doing much to rebound or just contribute or move the ball. He might disappear for a little while. Not defensively, he doesn't. He does not disappear defensively, and that is the consistency which was earmarked, and the inconsistency was the reason why he wasn't getting much love. Plus, you're weighing everything he does against your expectations of the number one overall pick in the draft, and that is a tough world to live in. By the way, Kwame Brown has a little something on that we'll get to a little later.
You know, it's funny you bring that up, because we were just talking some, you know, random Hall of Fame stuff before the show and talking about Chris Webber, and I really think that timeout at Michigan was something that was held against him in the eyes of the vast majority of people through his entire NBA career, like just subconsciously. Just, he's a choker. He's the guy who did that at the end of the game. You know, all that sort of stuff. It went with him forever. And I think that can happen all too easily in sports. This one narrative you get sort of stamped with unfairly colors sort of everything else you do from then on forward.
That wasn't the only thing, though, that I think they held against him.
With what? No, I know with Weber. I mean, but I'm just saying in the case of Wiggins, like, we are so far past that draft.
Right.
It's three teams since the one. It was the Cavs who actually drafted him, for God's sakes. We don't. Who cares that right. He was the number one overall pick? Can he help your team today?
Yeah, down the stereotype. What are you looking at?
Right.
Yeah. I mean, this is apropos of nothing, but the Basketball Reference game score that they give everybody when they play.
Yes.
You know, basically, if you're in single digits, you had a crummy game. First half of the year, which is 36 games. Wiggins had 13 of those. The second half of the year, he had 5, which meant that whatever your expectations were, he met them more before the break than he did after. And that's what you're looking for in a player, which is, can I rely on you to be a factor? I don't need you to have like exemplary games when somebody else is terrible, but just don't let us down yourself. And he let them down like 5 times in the second half. Yeah. That's a pretty good record.
Oh, and there's no doubt. He's gotten better. He is doing what Steve Kerr has asked him to do, and that's checking the box as a player. Are you satisfying what the coach wants out of you? Wiggins can say, yeah, I did that. Almost every single night I went out there and I played.
And isn't there also a little bit in this of the maybe we can allow for more growth in athletes after the age of like 23, even if they have been in the league? I mean, we're getting into a world where it's becoming more the rule than the exception that guys enter, at least with basketball, at 19 or 20 years old. And I think in the past, we've sort of said, well, but even the guys who come in at 19 or 20, you know, by 3 or 4 years in, we kind of know what they are, right? And maybe that's because they were the most exceptional, unbelievable 19 and 20-year-olds, and they were the rare cases. Now that everyone's coming in at 19 and 20, I think we got to allow for more time before deciding what guys are. Because, you know, this version of Wiggins might not have been the number one overall pick if you did it all over again, but the guy the Warriors got this year is significantly better than an awful lot of totally reputable NBA people thought he'd ever be capable of as little as like 6 months ago.
Yeah, here's what we lack. We lack patience. We lack nuance. We lack the ability to think for ourselves, where you hear a stereotype just get regurgitated about a guy over and over and over again. And, I mean, we live in a world where we want instant analysis of a player's NBA career the night he's drafted. You know, the night that he actually...
Give me a grade.
Yeah. Who is he going to be? Well, that's definitely an A-minus draft pick. I mean, it's crazy. So,
draft grades are based only 100% on the guy who gave them. Wait a minute.
True.
My mock draft says he should have gone 6th rather than 8th. That was a reach.
You know, it's funny we talk about, like, you know, after 3 to 5 years, you can really go back and grade a draft. I'd like to see, let's go back and grade the grades.
Let's grade the teachers.
Yeah. Oh, 3 to 5 years later, how'd you do grading the draft on draft night? Not great, I would imagine.
Yeah, no, the unemployed cordwood pyramid would be enormous. But I will say this. If Wiggins was still in Minnesota, he'd probably still be the guy that everybody was condemning. I think coming here and playing with Curry sort of gave him a sense of, okay, you don't have to be the number one draft pick. Just do what we tell you. And he became a more conscientious defender, night in and night out, than he ever was in Minnesota. And that's where the difference was, because he was still about the same offensive guy. So I think in some ways, the stereotype of Wiggins was true.
Well, it was based on fact.
He needed to move. And if you get one of those things where all of a sudden the guy's got an opportunity to not to reinvent himself, but to just change the narrative, I think that works too. So it's not maybe that people were wrong about him.
Sure.
It's that they're wrong about him now if they're still assuming what they believed a year ago was accurate.
Sure. All I'm saying is I think a lot of people closed the door on what he might be capable of. And let me ask you guys this, both of you. Obviously, look, Andrew Wiggins' improvement, number one person who gets credit is Andrew Wiggins. But putting that aside, who do you think gets like a bump for this? Does Draymond get one? Is it an organizational thing? Is it Steve Kerr? Like, where does the sort of shared credit belong?
I think all over the place, because you can't really identify one reason for why. I mean, maybe he felt he had to be a better defender because he looked at Draymond defending.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he felt like offensively he didn't have to carry so much of the burden because he had Curry. Maybe Steve Kerr whispered sort of sweet we love yous in his ear over and over again, and he just felt more supported. So it could be anybody.
Right. Who improved his self-confidence? Who improved, it did more to improve the dog in him? Who, you know, I, not being in practice, you don't really know
sure.
who to give the credit to. I think we got our first really good question for Steve Kerr when we talked to him a little bit later on this week, because that is, who is most responsible for this? And I'm leaning towards him saying, you know, he's going to give an answer that spreads the credit.
Yes.
And by the way, that is the theme of the team, and that has an awful lot to do with who all of these guys have become. Steph Curry just had the kind of year on the kind of team that would give someone the ability to point to themselves and say, look at how great I am and I was this year. Steph Curry, when asked about his scoring title, began his answer with this.
Well, the first thing I told the guys in the locker room, like, no matter what anybody says, I appreciate what they've all brought to the, you know, this season, because, like I said, it wasn't pretty and it wasn't a steady climb at all, even to get to this spot. But I appreciate everybody out there committing to how we play. And that's really unlocked what I do best, and try to help myself and help out, you know, everybody else, especially on the offensive end of the floor. So, you know, that was huge. But, you know, God is good. I've been blessed to be back healthy and be able to just play, you know, night and night out at a high level.
You know, and look, I don't mean to cut off Mr. Curry there, but for the sake of the why I wanted to play that soundbite is, yes, he gets into his season and the way he went about it, and he's healthy and he feels good, look good, feel good, play good, all that stuff right there. But again, an individual question about you, Steph, he immediately pivots to the entire team. And don't tell me who I'm not playing with. And don't tell me about my teammates aren't being good enough. And there's a lot of people who say that over and over again. They're good enough for me. And if they're good enough for me, they might be good enough for you guys, too, because I'm Steph Curry, you know. And it's he's constantly looking to spread the wealth. And that, I think, affects the way guys play around you and for you and by you, because you know that even if the rest of the world that doesn't get it, the most important person in your basketball world does.
But there was wealth to be spread because Andrew Wiggins was a better player in the second half than the first half. Draymond Green was better in the second half than the first half. People started to appreciate Juan Toscano-Anderson and Kevon Looney in the second half. They were a better team in the last 30 games of the year.
You know who else is
better? And that way, you know, whatever Curry said, it had the added value of being genuine. He wasn't doing this on a team that went 26-46.
Well, but okay. You're right, Ray. They were better. To be fair, they were better when Steph was on the floor all year long. But they were definitely better in the second half. And all those things you just said are true. But for perspective, last year, the Houston Rockets were a home court advantage team in the first round of the Western Conference playoffs. And their superstar's response to that was to demand that they make several trades and then demand that the next trade be him, because he didn't think he could win a title there. And I'm not even saying this to dog James Harden. I think there are plenty of superstars in the league who would handle it exactly the way James Harden did. But Steph Curry's different. And I think that's the point. It's not, you know, that his teammates don't deserve some credit. All credit to him, sure. But Steph does it different than the other big stars. He just does.
With Steph on the court,
the Warriors had the 10th best offense in the NBA. Without him on the court this season, they had the worst NBA offense in the last 5 years. And by the way, that would lean somebody back into the MVP conversation, which we know Steph has leaned back into it. Enough to actually win it? I do not know. He was spectacular. In his last 26 games of the season, Steph averaged 37 points per game. Mm. Now, if we were only given the MVP to the second half, Steph is unanimous again. Okay, that's who he is. He would be unanimous if we started this entire MVP debate 26 games ago, but we do not. We start the debate. Well, we shouldn't start the debate until right around now, but everything matters. The grades start coming in on night one, and nobody had a better overall full season grade than Jokic.
Unbelievable.
That is still a fact that every Warrior fan has to be able to say out loud. And Steph, I bet you would want you to say it out loud too. Anyways, we got much more coming up. Michael Wilbon, Hall of Famer, right around the corner. He's coming up at 3 o'clock, and I bet we go long that segment because we got an awful lot to talk to Michael Wilbon about a little bit later on, 5:20 tonight. Nick Wright, Damon Ratto and Kolsky, all three of us back in the studio for the first time in a long time. We're brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full service banking, no compromises.
Don't miss Warriors Lakers Wednesday night on 95.7 The Game. Now back to Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky.
Golden State Warrior teams used to be too good for critics to appreciate what Steph Curry did. Is this team significantly flawed enough for you to appreciate him now? I would hope so. I mean, what more do you want than one of the oldest scoring champions in NBA history? Steph Curry joins a list of Michael Jordan, Wilt Chamberlain, and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Two of those guys were officially taller than him. So was the third. That's your list. That is your list of guys who have won multiple scoring titles, multiple MVPs, and multiple championships. He is one of four. That's pretty damn special. Because when you look at who the other guys are, on the, like, hey, scoring list, scoring title, look at that, look at this. It's the who's who of everybody to have ever played this game. And Steph is now not among them. He's above most of them. I mean, that's the thing. It's no longer a, well, what do you think he is? Well, you don't have to think about it. Historically, he is now, without debate, one of the single greatest players in the history of the sport of basketball. To try to frame him as what he isn't, it's just a fool's errand. I mean, you're Skip Bayless talking about what LeBron isn't. I mean, you can't pay attention to that guy.
The truth is that people have glommed onto Curry this year in large part because he did it by himself, or at least that is the perception, that the numbers when he was with other guys were somehow diminished because of the fact that he was on a really, really good team with other real standout players. It took until this year, I think, because his numbers stand out alone. And I think there are a lot of people who follow the NBA, although I think there's probably a diminishing number of people who do that, who get why he was so good when he was part of the ensemble. But now they understand it when he's on an eighth place team where he's basically defined as the offense.
As the youngest member of the panel, I really want to try to avoid being get-off-my-lawn old man guy when I can. But this strikes me as, like, potentially related to the I'm a fan of these players, not this team generation thing. That there is a loss of appreciation for that. That, like, just the very notion, I mean, when you really think about it, the very notion that, like, well, I really got to see him struggle to make the playoffs to understand how great he is so stupid.
Right. Yeah. Do you not remember all the basketball that was played before right. Andre Iguodala said, all right, I'm coming?
Right. As if, like, had you replaced Steph Curry with Ish Smith on the Kevin Durant teams, the Warriors would have been just as good. Like, what are you people talking about? Like, did you watch? Did you watch before Kevin Durant got here? And you know, a lot of times the answer is no. But in general, I have a lot of trouble with the notion that until you really struggle because your teammates stink and everybody's hurt, you're not really one of the greats. I think it's a very dumb way of looking at it. And even if you insist on looking at it that way, now Steph Curry has answered that question for you, too.
It's also a brand new standard not applied to great players in the past.
True.
It's so weird.
No, but there are a group of people who look at Allen Iverson as one of the greatest players of all time, even though most of his best work was done on substandard teams.
Yeah.
Because what he did stood out so much. I mean, it literally took Stephen Curry to suddenly become a 25-shot-a-game player for some people to notice him.
Look, and Ray, I support the people that want to love on Allen Iverson for never having good teammates, but I'll bet you anything, if we could go back and Allen Iverson could have somebody better than Eric Snow as the second-best player on his team a few of those years, he'd do that for sure.
No question. I mean, that's why I still say for everybody who's going to look at this as Stephen Curry's best year, it's simply not. Either one of the years that, well, the year that he was the unanimous MVP sort of stands out.
You know what I think they mean?
The problem is, well, let me finish and then go ahead. It's literally that, no, we need to see raw numbers because we understand raw numbers. We don't want to spend time with more nuanced kind of basketball. And again, I think that's probably a diminishing number of people, but it is amazing how many people sort of glommed onto him this year and said, boy, this is the best year. It's not his best year. It's a great year, but it looks even better than that based on who's around him. And I realize in saying that, I'm slighting Draymond Green, and I don't mean to. But the newfound Curry love, I think, sort of falls into that, oh, he finally proved that he could do it by himself. When doing it by yourself is self-defeating.
Right. No one in this league is ever doing it by themselves. I've never seen a one-on-five basketball game be allowed to take place in an NBA game.
You don't watch Russell Westbrook nearly as much as you should.
Touche. Steve Kerr asked, is this the best you've seen, Steph?
Well, he's never been better. I can say that. He's been great for a long time, though, so it's hard to say he's at his best now because he's been like this for years. I think what's different this year is just the supporting cast is different. You know, we've got a much younger team. He's been asked to do a lot more with this group, and he's gone above and beyond what we've asked of him. So just an incredible season, and that's, I'll just leave it at that. He's never been better than he is right now.
And again, I don't want to keep on going over old ground or, you know, picking old scabs. If Kevin Durant never showed up with the Golden State Warriors, I bet you Steph Curry would have had more scoring titles than he already has, fewer NBA titles than he does, and maybe even more respect in a world that doesn't understand what really matters in a team sport.
I think you might be right about that. And certainly, right? Just from a scoring perspective, like, the numbers would look ridiculous. If you think about how many threes the guy made with Kevin Durant on his team in his age 28, 29, and 30 seasons or something like that, like, arguably his shooting prime, although certainly this year would argue he's still in that. If he was shooting 10 threes a game next to Kevin Durant on a team that cruised to a lot of victories, imagine if Kevin Durant wasn't there, how many, he might have had a 500 three-pointer year. Who the hell knows? It would have been like nothing we've ever seen. But you know what I think people really mean when they say this is his best year? Because to Ray's point, it's clearly not. Like, what they mean is it's the most impressive. What they mean is
the biggest uphill climb.
Yes. What they mean is you lost Kevin Durant. You lost Klay Thompson again. You're coming off an injured season. Your teammates, not only are they not as good as they were, but you haven't played with them at all, and you don't get to practice all that much because it's COVID protocols, and everything's a little weird. And across the league, teams are losing and winning by more than they ever have, right? It's all bizarre. And despite all of that, he's every bit as effective as he ever has been, and he puts out just on some individual one-night performances that blow your mind. So people, that's what it is. Somehow this is more mind-blowing than when he was doing it on a otherwise great team in a clear championship favorite situation. this is more mind-blowing and impressive. It's not really a better season in the end.
No, I would be willing to bet, without having any information to back this up other than my own stupid opinion, that he would have found any one of 15, 16, 17, or 18 more rewarding than this. Just by, I mean, because he is ultimately a guy who was comfortable, not only comfortable, but delighted being the best part of an ensemble. Or when Durant came, if you want to put it this way, the second best part of the ensemble. He likes playing that way. And I think there's a part of him that will say, boy, this is really impressive, but it sure was a lot more fun when I was part of a greater whole.
Yeah, you know what he likes?
Winning.
Winning basketball.
Yeah.
How about that? Winning seems to be his priority.
Yeah, like that trade that you just mentioned. If Durant never came, he'd have more scoring titles and less championships. He would never do that.
Right.
No, he prefers the three parades to to finishing second in the MVP race.
Yeah. By the way, I think, and you know, okay, it's unfair, but I'm going to say, I think James Harden would totally take that deal. I think there are guys who, man, my individual accomplishments mean as much to me as any team accomplishment I've been on. And I just, look, or maybe that's an unfair to hold against a guy. I don't even know. Like, I'm tired of trying to get into what is in that guy's head.
Forget Harden. I think I would say this.
Because Harden's awesome.
You know, he's incredible.
I'm tired of telling, if I'm saying stop telling me what Steph Curry isn't, he gets that too.
Well, and if you want to crap on James Harden for all the things he did wrong this year, and I think there's plenty, like, he was definitely doing it to try to get to a place where he had a better shot to win a title, right? So I won't doubt, but I will say this. James Harden aside, without naming names, I think it's very safe to say that there's a lot of guys in the league, an overwhelming percentage, in fact, who, if they already had the one title, would choose the individual accolades.
Oh, yeah. I can just check the ring.
I got the ring.
I don't have to live the life of Charles Barkley.
Exactly.
You're telling me no one's ever get to say, well, you never won it all, so therefore you don't matter? Yeah. Yeah. How about this? Real quick question. If Kevin Durant were still here, are the Warriors favored to win the NBA title?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, again, if nothing else changes, there would be questions about, well, is he fully back from, you know, we haven't seen enough, you know. That there would be that nagging question.
It'd be kind of like in the same way the Nets are favorites to win the East, right? Like, as long as everything holds together.
Yeah, because that's what this whole year was about. It's who didn't fall down.
And even
that's
now,
one of the reasons why Jokic is a mortal lock to be the MVP.
72 games.
He played them all.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what was Embiid in the end, like 53?
He missed 21 games, I believe.
Okay,
I think we talked about this
earlier. So 51.
Or no, wait, maybe that's somebody else.